You might have heard on Life Matters previously that from April 1st, there'll be big changes to the way private health insurance rebates work. So if you're a fan of Bowen therapy, Tai Chi, iridology, reflexology, or Rolfing, among other natural therapies, you won't be getting any cash back through your health fund for those. Many people might be thinking, good, why should our taxes be subsidising these therapies? But what if it meant less research into whether those therapies work, or limits on health services offering those therapies at all? John Wardle is Associate Professor of Public Health at UTS. Welcome, John.
Hi, Hilary. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. This is a very complex issue, but let's make it as simple as possible. What was the aim of the legislation around private health rebates that saw those therapies put on a list?
Okay, so the aim ultimately of the legislation was simply to remove the government subsidy for insurers offering these therapies. So most insurance in Australia is subsidised to the tune of around 25%, a little bit more, meaning that if an insurer pays out $100, they get roughly $25 back from the government.
And can you give us a sense of that list so we know what we're dealing with?
Okay, so the list is, there's 16 therapies on that list, and I think one of the confusing things with a term like natural therapies is it does include some fringe therapies, but it also includes therapies like yoga, tai chi, naturopathy, herbal medicine, some of which are actually now included in international clinical guidelines, like for low back pain or asthma or cardiovascular care, treatments that are actually quite evidence-based now. This report is quite old, the evidence that this particular change is based on. It's over 6 years old now. But it does, the list does also include some fringe therapies that probably shouldn't be included in insurance. But the all-encompassing nature of this legislation means that you've got therapies that don't work, that aren't being covered.
And it's just got things like homeopathy, like you mentioned, that's been categorically debunked. So, John Wardle, you're arguing that this is having an impact on other parts of the health system, for example, the hospital system. Can you untangle that a bit for us?
Sure. It is a very complex issue, but ultimately, rather than just changing the legislation to impact the subsidy, which is what the Labor Party actually proposed, the current government have actually removed have actually excluded these natural therapies from all elements of the insurance legislation. So this means Rule 11 for general treatment, these natural therapies are excluded, which also excludes them from chronic disease management programs, which is the sort of bundled packaged care. So even if insurers aren't paying for these services directly, they're not allowed to be included in those plans.
So just explain bundling a little bit more for us, for the layperson.
Okay, sure. So if you've got a mental health program, rather than actually pay an individual benefit for one yoga practitioner consult, this is a package of care which includes an individualised plan to actually help people with all treatments that are known to be clinically effective. So you might have a suite of self-care exercises, there may be some self-directed classes, there may be some practitioner visits. So the insurance legislation does allow for people with risk factors for chronic disease to actually attend programs of care rather than just individual consultations. There's also an element called health management plans, which is actually the section of the legislation which allows things like gym memberships or sports memberships or any service which is actually not usually eligible for health fund cover to be included. And natural therapies are also specifically excluded from that piece as well.
So you're saying in a health management plan offered by a hospital, the plan would not be able to be offered if it included one of the therapies on this list?
Well, health management plans are usually general treatment, so they usually occur in an outpatient setting, but Rule 8 relates to hospital treatment, and that very specifically also excludes natural therapies. So what this means is that hospitals, to be compliant with the health insurance legislation in Australia, aren't allowed to integrate or interact their currently reimbursable treatments with any of these natural therapies.
So it wouldn't be technically illegal for them to offer the therapies, though, would it? It would just be administratively a bit more complex. They'd have to set it outside those plans.
Yes, but so complex it would almost be impossible. They'd essentially have to, they wouldn't be able to record it in the same system. They wouldn't be able to bill it through the same system. There wouldn't be able to be any referrals or interactions through through official processes. So it would be a very, very large barrier to integration.
Now, John Wardle, as you know, there are a lot of different voices in this sector, and Life Matters has checked the issue with Private Healthcare Australia, which represents a number of private healthcare funds. They have confirmed that it will be difficult for a private hospital to offer any therapies on the excluded list to their patients. But do you have any concrete evidence that these changes to private health insurance would also affect the public health system, as you're suggesting? Because Life Matters also checked with the Australian Hospitals and Healthcare Association, and they are not aware of any ban on the public system offering those therapies.
Yeah, and well, actually, I've spoken with insurers and hospitals, and in their briefings from government, the hospital exclusion has not even been discussed. So a lot of groups only thought it was about general treatment. They didn't realise the exclusion was in hospital treatment as well. Theoretically, if public hospitals now actually offer a large suite of private health reimbursable items in Australia, and most hospitals, including public hospitals, develop their services to be compliant with billing legislation such as this. So it's a very complex system. One service in a hospital can be subject to any one of 40 pieces of legislation. So it is a quite complex arrangement. Public hospitals are probably slightly less affected than private hospitals are. Although I think the thing a lot of people don't realise is a lot of public hospitals do actually offer a lot of private outpatient services particularly, and this is where the natural therapies would exist, and they would have to be completely separate from anything that's even eligible for private health insurance rebates, even if that particular patient is not taking those rebates themselves.
You're listening to Life Matters, and we're chatting with John Wardle, Associate Professor in Public Health at UTS, and we're also joined by Leanne Wells, the CEO of the Consumer Health Forum. Leanne, welcome.
Hello, Hilary.
Hi. You were supportive of the move to stop some natural therapies from attracting a subsidy under the private health insurance system when the legislation was passed. Tell us what your rationale was at the time.
Yeah, we were supportive of excluding natural therapies. Where we're coming from as a national consumer body is we stand for health treatments and health spends that deliver the most benefit to the community overall. And we all know that, the health budget has its limits, the scope for spending is vast. So we support the principle that government spending, taxpayer subsidised spending in health really should focus on evidence-based therapies. So the rule of evidence for us is really important. And, in the same way that services are eligible for subsidy under Medicare, under the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, they have to pass a rigorous test for effectiveness and efficacies. At the moment, natural therapies don't and haven't passed that threshold, if you like.
I guess John is saying,
that's really
Leanne,
where we're coming from.
That John is saying too that some of the therapies have passed a higher threshold than others and that they've all been kind of lumped into the same list. What's your response to that?
Yeah, look, I mean, John's absolutely right. There is a broad spectrum in those 16 excluded services. And we know we've got a broad constituency at CHF, as you can imagine. We know that many people like Pilates and yoga, but popular doesn't mean that that's the best thing that we need to be subsidising. That said, CHF is very supportive of translational evidence and evidence that supports services and community access to more services. So we the rules around what's in this list aren't set in stone. If fresh evidence emerges or if there's a different way of presenting the evidence for some of those therapies, as John said, can come to the table and be put to government, then we'd be very supportive of that. Because we know, and particularly with Pilates and yoga, we know that it's a bit of a mantra, but evidence is exercise is medicine, and we want to see in the context of primary care delivery and the sorts of things that GPs offer as well for good lifestyle risk factor management, exercise being actively encouraged.
And we'll talk a little bit more about those whole of sector issues in a moment. But I wonder if you have a response, Leanne, to John's claims that these laws could make it much more difficult for those therapies to be offered in private hospitals.
Look, certainly sounds like that's the case, but we also understand and we need to unpack that we're talking about exclusions from general health or what used to be called extras health insurance cover. The issue that John seems to be raising relates to the extent to which they're excluded from delivery and rebates in the hospital setting under hospital insurance cover. We might need to check this with the Department of Health, but certainly our understanding is that even before these changes, natural therapies would have been excluded anyway because they weren't eligible for a Medicare rebate then, they're not now, and they would have also required patient admission to hospital. It is complex, as John and yourself are acknowledging.
It is. My brain is swirling at the moment.
Indeed.
I'm speaking with Leanne Wells, CEO of the Consumer Health Forum, and John Wardle, Associate Professor in Public Health at UTS. Now, John, you're a research fellow with the National Health and Medical Research Council, and your focus is on researching natural therapies. What impact are you saying that these changes to the private health insurance system are having on your ability to conduct research into natural therapies?
Look, it's essentially means that we can't research how they actually integrate with other aspects of the healthcare system. So Leanne mentioned hospital treatments. I would just add that this extends to outpatient care. So the exclusion from chronic disease management plans and health management plans also mean that even outside the hospitals, integrating with other insured items is not possible. Now, because of this, because most policies are built around. Not just this piece of legislation, but most pieces of legislation. It means that when we do research, we can't actually integrate it with hospital settings, organisations that actually accept insurance for their other items. So we've lost a number of research projects because of this, one of which was actually funded by the NHMRC. One in yoga, one in naturopathy, and one in herbal medicine. So it is actually having an impact. We've already seen this impact. And the reason that we've been told is because they can no longer offer these services if they want to remain compliant with this particular piece of legislation.
So, John, I need to ask, how do you know that these projects weren't stopped for other unrelated reasons?
Oh, well, you know, they were the organisations in this particular occasion were actually very keen to continue with this research. Contracts had been signed. There'd been press releases put out or prepared, and it wasn't until the lawyers got involved and actually told us that we could not continue, that we stopped continuing. And that's what actually made us actually look into this. This is something that we've been putting into government submissions since, I think, March last year. So it's not an issue that wasn't foreseen. It was an issue that we warned about in our submissions to government for nearly a year now. So it was something that we foresaw. It was something that we hoped wouldn't happen, but it is something that has eventuated.
And John, how do you know that the organisations are fully understanding the legal aspects? Are they just a bit scared, or are they saying we definitely can't?
Look, some are saying that they definitely can't. I would probably say that at least one of the organisations is probably being overcautious, but even being overcautious does still have a practical impact. So, you know, there is a, you know, the exclusions of natural therapies from integrating with other services is very, very explicit in this legislation. If you read the legislation itself and the amendments, it's very difficult to interpret it any other way. So, the key thing with a lot of these therapies, and you know, I would say that not all of these therapies, but a lot of these therapies do have a very robust evidence base. So, some of the projects that we're actually we're going to go ahead are projects that are either going on in other countries. So, our yoga project was a replication of a project in one of the major hospitals in Boston. It's also based on work that the NHS actually requires NHS Trust to actually offer, you know, yoga for low back pain due to the evidence base. So there weren't many other factors that were actually causing people concern about these projects. This piece of legislation came up, and that's the only concern they have. They need to remain compliant with this legislation so that they can continue to be reimbursed for all the other services they offer.
I was interested in the pro-vaccination naturopath research project too. Can you tell us about that one?
Sure. So this is probably a little bit separate from the private health insurance discussion. Apart from the fact that the organisation actually interpreted this legislation to mean that any therapies or practices on that list could no longer be incorporated with other services, and because other allied health services were involved in that piece of legislation, they weren't being funded by private health insurance for that particular project, but for other projects that were involving that team, they were, and so they decided not to continue. So that particular project was the one that's funded by NHMRC. We're using, you know, essentially, you know, for people that don't trust the medical profession, they're not going to take on public health advice from from the medical profession, but if they have a type of practitioner they trust more, they may trust that advice a little bit more. So it was a very innovative project. There was very robust pilot data supporting good clinical impact of that particular project, but as I said, it was not able to continue.
Leanne Wells, what's your perspective on this? Do you have any concerns about research being curtailed because of these legislative changes?
Look, I'd be surprised if, you know, this legislation was you know, the sole contributor to projects, as John describing, going ahead. I suppose my comment is that we have big health challenges to find better ways of responding to in this country. We've got obesity at record levels. That's a huge concern. Where we want lifestyle risk factor management interventions that are evidence-based brought to the fore, put into play. We've got burgeoning chronic conditions. We've got pain, issues with pain, as John's alluding to. So, look, we're really supportive of translational medical research at CHF. We are an evidence-based organisation, and we want to ensure that the benefits of medical science are applied to healthcare as quickly as possible. So, you know, if research into interventions that are exercise-based in particular for issues like obesity are being curtailed, we would be concerned about that. So you know, what John's describing is a surprise to me. If the legislation in particular has been a contributor there, I don't know whether that's the case or not. I guess one of the things, or the promising things we've got on the horizon that we're all watching with very interested eyes, is the Medical Research Future Fund, and it has funding streams that actually encourage community organisation-led research and NGO organisation-led research, for example, and health system and service development research. So, you know, we, in our submissions to the MRFF and the sorts of priorities it should have across the course of its research spending, and that's over and above, you know, that's investment into health and medical research over and above NH and MRC and other investments, and it's substantial. We really want to see the emphasis on, you know, discovery research, health service and system development research, research that really is community and NGO-led as much as clinician and investigator-led, so that we can start looking at progressive healthcare in this country. We've got a good health system.
But it needs some tweaking is the message
we
there.
We do need to, there's always ways to improve it.
John, we're in an election year. Do you have any indication that the Productivity Commission review that the federal Labor seems very keen to implement if they win government would lead to any changes that would be positive in your view?
Oh, look, I think if you actually looked at this dispassionately, some of those therapies would be re-included. You know, the notion that this will save money is not actually supported by evidence. There have been a few economic analyses done, and it actually suggests that inclusion of these therapies actually reduces the cost of health insurance on average, largely by bringing new people into the pool, but also some preventive actions like, you know, yoga preventing further surgical initiatives. And the other thing to remember is that, you know, this piece of legislation, it was really about subsidies, but the way that it's written is not about subsidies. It is a prohibitive list, which basically means if you're on that list, you can't be covered. Interestingly, if you're not on that list, you can be covered. So things like Reiki or crystal healing could still be legally covered by private health insurance in Australia. And there are more effective ways of getting the same policy goal without having these unintended flow-on effects. So we've been advocating for a permissive list, so having a level of evidence that natural therapies have to pass and then be included positively in that list, which is the same way that allied health is included, or the Labor Party proposal, which was reporting and readjustment. So Labor proposed allowing insurers to cover whatever they wanted, but then requiring them to report how much they'd spent on those therapies and adjusting the subsidy that way. And I think they probably had in mind potentially bringing other therapies that perhaps shouldn't be subsidised into that arrangement. So that would be a flexible arrangement too. So there are far more effective and far less damaging ways to achieve the same policy goal as what the government has done here, but in a far more effective way.
It will be very interesting to see what this election year brings. And with over $6 billion of public money given to private health insurers this financial year, I'm sure it would be a very big topic of interest. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming on the program today. Leanne Wells.
Thanks, Hilary.
Cheers. Leanne Wells is the CEO of the Consumer Health Forum, and John Wardle is Associate Professor of Public Health at UTS and an NHMRC TRIP Research Fellow.